Good morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion, politics, military, and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, as we will do in our first hour of our program today, I'm going to try to explain why the things that we will be reviewing have happened and what they mean to you. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which means teaching, not law, and by way of His covenant, a relationship which features five conditions that not one in a million people know. If you're an atheist or an agnostic, or you just are an individual that knows there's something not quite right with your religion, this will be the best part of each day's program. Our number, if you would like to question, to criticize, or to affirm something that I have said, is 877-300-7645. That is 877-300-7645. I invite your calls. Now, for those seeking verification of anything that I share with you today, I would encourage you to visit introtogod.org or yadaya.com. Now on to the news. As you no doubt heard in the first segment of the news this morning, Mark Emmert, who is the president of the NCAA, announced today that Penn State would pay a $60 million fine, which was equivalent to one full year of football revenues. That is the equivalent of giving them the death penalty, as it's called, the SMU penalty, where they would have to forfeit football operations for an entire year. In this case, they're donating to victims of abuse charities the proceeds from a full year of football operations. That I'm sure is so that other universities in the Big Ten that have scheduled games with Penn State don't lose the revenue from that game if Penn State were banned from play. They will lose a number of scholarships. I think it is 10 for 5 years, and they will forgo postseason bowl appearances, as if that is going to matter, considering all of the turmoil and these other sanctions, for 4 years. What this tells us is that in our society, the single most egregious crime is pedophilia. You see, we've had universities that have won national championships and have been celebrated, as have their coaches, that have had one out of five players on those teams be arrested for crimes. Look at the University of Florida during the Urban Meyer years. You know, it was criminal U. With, you know, one out of five players having been arrested for crimes. And yet, you have Auburn, a few years thereafter, that has a one-and-done with a football player that also had been arrested for a crime and who background shows cheated on tests. But that was done at one university, so it wasn't a problem at the other university. His father solicited hundreds of thousands of dollars in a pay-for-play scheme, and yet that did not affect Auburn or their national championship. Pedophilia is the issue which we as a society, I think, are the most concerned about. That being the case, there are two associated institutions, not associated in the sense of they have anything to do with Penn State, but associated in terms of the crime, that have yet to be held accountable for creating an environment where pedophilia could occur, where the youngest and most innocent are victimized. That, of course, is the Roman Catholic Church, and one that might surprise you, the religion of Islam. In the Roman Catholic Church, now Pope Benedict, formerly Cardinal Ratzinger, for almost two decades, created an environment where the reputation of the Roman Catholic Church was more important, its revenue streams and those bodies that it had control over, those souls it had control over, was more important than protecting children. And so rather than exposing and condemning and incarcerating by turning over to the authorities known pedophiles, the Roman Catholic Church chose to cover it up, very much like Penn State did. You know, the administrators of Penn State created the environment which allowed Jerry Sandusky to continue to be a pedophile. Cardinal Ratzinger, who is now the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church, did exactly the same thing. And yet there are still 1 billion members of that church going on as if they were unaware that this happened and that they were deliberately duped and that their children were abused. And this is not a small issue with Roman Catholicism. It's not like the Penn State situation where you have a dozen and perhaps a score of young people abused. In Roman Catholicism, it's hundreds of thousands of young boys who have been abused by officials in their church. You may not be aware, but Muhammad, who was the lone prophet of Islam, was a pedophile. Now, I said that Muhammad was the lone prophet of Islam. Keep in mind that Islam claims that that everybody that you would read about in your Bible, not a term that I use often, but I will use it here, was a Islamic prophet. But the claim is historically false. And so that leaves Muhammad as the lone spokesperson for Islam. When he was 50 years old, he began to have sex with six-year-old girls. By any standard, by any age, that is pedophilia. And he continued to do it throughout the remainder of his life. He was, as we shall learn as we move through various aspects of the news, the most repulsive man who ever lived. And yet he is the founder of the world's second largest religion, and perhaps even the largest religion, depending on census counts. There is a third aspect of pedophilia that I'd like you to consider, and we will consider it as we review the news and future programs, and that is national deficits. You know, those things that are plaguing Europe, Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, Ireland, where the national debts are either reaching 100% of annual GDP, or in the case of Greece, at about 160% of GDP. In the United States, our aggregate deficit now is over 100% of our gross national product. Deficits are economic pedophilia. With deficits, the current generation, adults, choose to indulge themselves and satiate their personal cravings for more, whatever it might be, making their children pay for these indulgences. Deficit spending is economic pedophilia. It is also interesting, just as we talk about what happened with Penn State and pedophilia, and we'll get into this in future programs as well, that what you would consider and have been told is the second commandment. It's actually the second of three statements on the first of two tablets. It actually has a warning against pedophilia in its center. It talks about fathers corrupting testimony so that they end up corrupting their children to the third and fourth generation. And when you corrupt your children, when you immerse your children in religious and political myths, you are, in a spiritual way, creating, demonstrating pedophilia. And this Penn State action by the NCAA is just one more evidence that when we see pedophilia in its most vivid and grotesque way, It is the thing that repulses us the most. So hopefully we will come to see it in the Roman Catholic Church and be repulsed, in Islam and be repulsed, in national deficits and be repulsed. In the second of three statements that Yah etched in stone regarding the consequence of pedophilia and understand. Moving to the second item that is high in the news today, CNN maintains that what happened in Aurora, Colorado, was the worst mass killing in U.S. history. Well, personally, I beg to differ. I think Gettysburg might have been a larger mass shooting in U.S. history than what took place in Aurora. There has been lots of hang-wringing over this, a lot of people pontificating and talking about various issues surrounding what happened there. And I'm going to report a few things about what happened and share a few things about what happened in Aurora that I hope engender some thought, maybe some conversation, maybe even some calls. This news comes from CNN. It says the shooter, who was James Holmes, in the mass killing at the Aurora, Colorado Theater, which was screening a midnight premiere of the Batman movie, The Dark Knight Rises, that he had colored his hair red and that he told police that he was the Joker. Now, this individual, as you know, had been a PhD candidate in neuroscience. And yet, as bright as he was still influenced by the Batman myth. He was smart, he knew a lot of things, and yet he obviously understood almost nothing. He was unable to distinguish the line between fact and fiction, between myth and reality. That movie, the original in this Batman series, the Dark Knight series, with Heath Ledger, influenced him significantly. He thought that he was the character. At least 12 people were killed in the rampage, and 58 more were injured. More than half of the dead were in their 20s. One as young as 6, who was out on a mother-daughter outing at the time. We'll return to this part of the story when we come back after the break. Again, this is Shattering Myths. Hello again, and welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. We had just begun speaking of the mass killing in Aurora, Colorado, where the shooter thought that he was playing the role of the Joker in the Batman, The Dark Knight series. And the point that I wanted to have you all think about there is that there is definitely a correlation between how we spend our time, we enjoy, what we choose to do with our free time, and who we become. If you're playing first-person shooter games all day, and that is what you find entertaining, you're going to be desensitized to killing. If you find movies that feature as much carnage and dark themes as the Batman series, then if you aren't mentally stable and you don't have a grounding someplace else, it will be very easy to slip into the fantasy world and be disassociated with the real world. Now, as we conclude this presentation, it's my opinion that to do anything related to censorship would be wrong. I have no issue whatsoever with the movie industry producing dark movies, if that's what they choose to do, and if that's what people want to see. I'm a big advocate of free will. If that's what you want to see, if that's what they want to produce, then fine. For most people, they aren't going to lose contact with reality. But understand that that is what caused this. An individual who was very bright, but had a broken conscience, lost touch with reality and thought that he was that character, and that when you invest an enormous amount of time doing something, whether it be fixating on movies like this, fixating on video games like this, it will have an influence on you. Speaking of that, we had one six-year-old girl who was killed on a mother and daughter outing. Now, what I'm going to say here is going to be received very poorly, I'm sure, by many of you. And I don't mean to be to come across as overly harsh here, but I want folks to think. This is not a movie for a six-year-old girl. The Dark Knight Rises, which the movie with Heath Ledger, I thought was a very well-crafted movie, but it's a movie for adults. It is not a movie for a six-year-old child. You ought not, as a parent, be taking your daughter to a midnight debut of a movie anywhere, particularly a six-year-old girl. Now, this mother did not kill her daughter, and it is a tragedy that her daughter is dead. But her daughter would be alive if the mother executed better judgment. There is nothing in life that is more important for us than for us to be good parents. That was not good parenting. Also, as it relates to this, a lot of people write me on the various websites and books that I have written and say, I know there is no God because if there was a merciful God, he would not allow such a thing to happen. And I'm here to tell you that if because God is merciful, this kind of thing has to happen because God had nothing to do with what happened. This was not his will. He did not intervene. This happened because men and women have chosen to prioritize myths. They have chosen to indulge themselves in things that he warned us against. And this happened because we made it happen, not because he made it happen. And the moment that he were to intervene in free will, then all of life is for naught. The only reason that we exist, the only reason the universe exists, is because of the covenant, which is a family-oriented relationship. And the moment God intervenes in free will, it means that that covenant relationship is for naught, that all of creation is for naught. Continuing with this story from CNN, it says the Joker has long been a fixture in the Batman comics and was famously brought to life by the late Heath Ledger in 2008, The Dark Knight, the predecessor to Friday's release of The Dark Knight Rises. Ledger won, as you may know, an Academy Award. Again, that role was splendidly presented. And this man began to believe that he was the Joker, that his goal was to start mayhem just like the Joker did. He lost track of the difference between fantasy and reality. And that is what this entire program is going to be devoted to. We want to expose these kinds of myths so that more people do not become victims. Well, with that, we will move to the second half of our hour and on the other side of the break, begin to talk about the Torah. Again, and welcome back to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. As we were coming out of the break, we were talking about the fact that we are all influenced by our society. And in this case, this individual was influenced by one of the most, well, to repeat a word, influential aspects of our society, which is movies. He thought he was the Joker, and the Joker is an extraordinarily twisted and dark character who would do exactly what this twisted man did. We are influenced by our society. One of the things that most people are unaware of, that I mentioned in the beginning of the program, that there are five terms and conditions associated with participating in the covenant. The first of those happens to be walk away from your country. And that particular country is Babel, which is also a state of mind. Babel is the Hebrew word for confusion and corruption. And as it is defined, it is religion and politics. God wants us to walk away from these things because they have a negative influence on us. And in this particular case, this individual was influenced by a negative aspect of society. Even look at Ledger himself, Heath Ledger. There is strong indication that his drug use and ultimate death was a result of him struggling with this difference between the character that he played, the myth, and the reality of life. Cannot emphasize enough that if you are spending an inordinate amount of your time immersed in things that have a negative influence on you, for example, so many young people today are just fixated with online and internet-related games, computer games, where shooting and killing are a central aspect of the genre of the games. There's a significant consequence of that. Let me give you a societal consequence of it. Today, America has made murder considered to be patriotic. We have sent drones, which are flown by a video console, played almost identically to a video game, and we have young men who are accustomed to playing first-person shooter video games, flying drones that are deadly. And we have shot and murdered U.S. citizens and murdered thousands of individuals without due process, without trial, killing them. And so when you look at that consequence and you have a society that has been immersed in this kind of culture, that is a negative consequence of this that is far more reaching than the people who were killed in Colorado. Now, so much of this story in Colorado has been surrounding the fact that he bought tactical gear and he had an AR-15 rifle and it had a large magazine on it and that he had a 12-gauge shotgun and that he had a couple of 40 caliber handguns and these guns were purchased legally, and if he had not been able to purchase the guns or the 6,000 rounds of ammunition, that this would not have happened. And just as I have shared that censorship, changing the what we can say in the media or in movies would be counterproductive, because it will be used to silence voices that say things that society does not want to hear. The same thing would be true with gun control. Actually, if there was less gun control, if the nation was more constitutional, and there was less gun control, this individual would not have been able to do what he did, as there would have been somebody in all likelihood in that theater who could have responded to him. Now, in that, you may wonder, since I claim that we're going to devote a significant part of this program to understanding Yah's Torah teaching. I use Yah, short for Yahweh. We'll get to that in a moment. And that many of you may think that the commandment that he etched in stone says, "You shall not kill." That's actually not what he wrote. First of all, it's not a commandment, it's an instruction. Morality cannot be commanded. Morality requires choice. Only one of the 10 statements that were etched in stone was etched in the imperative mood. Only one even has the possibility of being a commandment, and we will find out that it was not. And the others are simply instructions. Now, in this particular case, Lo Rasha, which is the Hebrew of the instruction, it says, you should not murder or kill on an ongoing basis. You should not make killing habitual. You should not make murder part of your behavior. It is attitudinal. It is speaking of an ongoing fascination with killing. We know that because it was scribed in what's called the imperfect conjugation. The imperfect conjugation speaks of ongoing habitual actions. And so someone who is engaged in the military and who enjoys killing as part of the military and loves combat, that's a problem. What this man did in killing after killing after killing, that's a problem. When religions or political schemes inspire mass killings, that's a problem. What a man did in Texas not too long ago when he saw a man raping his, I don't know if it was 4 or 6 year old, but very, very, very young daughter. He smacked him and in the head and killed him. That would not have been a violation of this instruction because he does not make a practice of killing. Now, in this particular case, investigators are confident that Holmes acted alone. Obviously, it's not an incident of terrorism. He did not have an agenda that he was trying to perpetrate because of this act. We're going to speak in this program in future days a great deal about terrorism, what terrorism represents, what that tactic means, why it is impossible to wage a war against terrorism because it is a tactic. But in this particular case, you can't learn anything about what happened or to avoid what happened by trying to study the mindset of this individual, other than just to take at face value what he said at the moment that he was first arrested, which is, "I am the Joker." He lets the movie, this artificial mythical world, influence him. Now, on a national level, you had Barack Obama say we should fly the flags at half-mast. This should be a day of prayer and reflection, and it has dominated the news. And yet, it isn't an issue that we can learn much from unless we get to the core issues which create this kind of environment in our societies, which is something that virtually no one is willing to talk about. And simply, you know, calling a radio show, talking on the news about the carnage that took place isn't helpful. The flags never should have been lowered to half-mast. This should not have been something that is way out of our natural realm of what we talk about in society. In fact, this is a small blip compared to the big issues which are eroding our society on every possible side. Now, Christopher Nolan, who is the director of the Dark Knight series, and particularly of the Dark Knight Rises, wrote this. He condemned the shootings as savage and appalling when his movie is savage. Now, I'm not going to say his movie is appalling. He's a very effective director. In the right audience, the movie is just fine. But the movie is savage. He wrote, "The movie theater is my home." And that's the problem. It is the home for a lot of people. It is a make-believe world. And that idea that someone would violate that innocent and hopeful place, he wrote. How can it be an innocent place when you are witnessing the mass carnage and the dark nature of that movie? In such an unbearable and savage way, he says, it's devastating to me. He bears guilt here. And he knows it. But he's doing everything he can to push that guilt away. And because most of the media is fairly liberal, they're not going to address the influence of the darkness and the twisted nature and the carnage of his movie with what happened. Now, if it had been a right-wing Christian wacko that had done this sort of thing, then they would do that. If they thought the Republican Party was saying, you know, you should target these liberals who are taking away your country, they would do that. But when the obvious connection is to Hollywood and liberalism and a movie, they won't do that. But Christopher Nolan has blood on his hands. What he produced influenced this action. Again, how we spend our time influences who we become. That's why Yah said, observe my Torah, because if we spend our time observing his Torah, observe does not mean keep, does not mean do, it means to look at, to examine, and to consider. then we will become very different than what became of Mr. Holmes. There is a consequence of deadly movies and deadly video games, and we're seeing it in the murder that is being perpetrated by the United States through the use of drones, which is an extension of these video games. The killing of an innocent child does not prove that there is no God, because a merciful God would let this happen, because free will is sacrosanct. You cannot have a covenant relationship without free will. This notion that God intervenes in every aspect of our lives, or that this was God's will, is absolute nonsense. It is a mythological creation of a God that has nothing in common with the real one. Lastly, anyone in government who does anything in response to this will do something that is counterproductive, whether that be censorship, whether that be diminishing people's freedoms, whether it be controlling guns. Everything that they do will be counterproductive in this regard. But as parents, there is something we can learn from this. We have the responsibility as parents to lead our children away from this kind of thing and to immerse them in that which is useful and beneficial to them, as opposed to poisonous to them. The next item on the news is today, 107 people were killed in a bomb and gun attack in Iraq, throughout Iraq. 20 different explosions in a coordinated surge of attacks perpetrated by Sunni Muslims against Shiite Muslims. When we return after the break, we're going to talk about how that story has messages that we really need to hear.
Introducing
Welcome back to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. We have politics, we have religion, we have military schemes at play in Iraq today. Over 100 people were killed in 20 different incidences, and some 300 people were severely wounded by these shootings and bombings. There is actually a lot we can learn from this, none of which appears in our media. For example, if we look at the stories that reported what happened today, the first thing we read is that no group has claimed responsibility for the wave of assaults, but a senior Iraqi official blamed a local wing of al-Qaeda made up of Sunni Muslim militants, bitterly hostile to the Shiite-led government, which is friendly with Iran. Now, there's some things there that are true and some things there that are false. One of the things that we learned when we killed Osama bin Laden and confiscated his files is that al-Qaeda, as formed by the United States government and by Mr. bin Laden, yes, al-Qaeda was formed jointly by the United States government and Osama bin Laden. It was an adjunct to the Taliban that Jimmy Carter and Zbigniew Brzezinski thought that that the United States could fund and arm so that these fundamentalist Muslims, these Mujahideen, would give the Russians a taste of what they gave us in Vietnam. So what we learned when we killed bin Laden and confiscated his files is that he had nothing to do with al-Qaeda in Iraq, that al-Qaeda didn't even exist in Iraq prior to the United States invasion. Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were bitter enemies. When George Bush said that he invaded Iraq in part because of the relationship between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, he was lying. There's absolutely no association between the two. And it wasn't until he was dead that al-Qaeda began to show up in Iraq. And what the files show from his compound in Pakistan is that not only did Osama bin Laden and his al-Qaeda have absolutely nothing to do with the so-called Al-Qaeda in Iraq. He hated them. He was adverse to them. And beyond that, when he would try to influence them, when he made an attempt to speak to them, they rebuffed him. They paid absolutely no attention to him. The same thing is true with the alleged Al-Qaeda franchise in Yemen, which was called Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula. The evidence that was published after the U.S. raid of those documents shows that bin Laden had absolutely no influence over, no association with any of these organizations. And the reason that's important is that as a world today, we're being told by our politicians that we're at war with Al-Qaeda, that Al-Qaeda is the enemy. Well, Al-Qaeda, for all practical purposes, does not exist. And even the little bit that there is such an organization, it is simply a symptom of a far bigger problem, and that is fundamentalist Islam. Osama bin Laden did not have an ideology. He did not have a personal cause. He was simply a fundamentalist Muslim, and Al-Qaeda is one of hundreds of clubs under which fundamentalist Muslims act. So when we blame this on Al-Qaeda, we are creating a mythological enemy. Now, it is true that these attacks were in all likelihood perpetrated by Sunni Muslims who are bitterly hostile to the Shiite government. And this article does say that Shiite government is friendly with Iran. Beyond that, folks, when America invaded Iraq, we committed suicide. We gave Iraq, which was the enemy of Iran, to Iran. Iraq now is controlled by Iran. We literally gave the enemy of the worst country in the world, which is Iran. We gave their enemy to them. There's nothing America could have done that would be more counterproductive or more suicidal or have graver consequences than what we did relative to Iraq. And we'll speak about that in future programs. Again, this is Shattering Myths.
I'm Pharmacist Ben, nutritional pharmacist and host of The Bright Side. The good news about nutrition and health.